Good morning, friends. It's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, ably assisted by our engineer par excellence, Terry Wilson. And the Friday show is produced by Kathleen Morgane. Happy to have with us in the studio this morning from Seaside, all the way from Seaside, Angela Fairless, who is running for mayor of Seaside. Thanks for coming up here, Angela.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'd like you to start by telling us a little bit about yourself and where you grew up and all of that.
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in Seaside, so I am a native, and I'm 31 years old, so I'm possibly young for a mayor's candidate, but I've been very active in local politics since I was about 21. I went to Clatsop Community College and Seaside High School. Something you and I have in common is we've both done a lot of college but have no degree. So I enjoyed a lot of time up at the college and really dabbled a lot in a lot of different classes, excuse me, but didn't ever actually finish my degree yet. And while I was there, I was the editor of the student publication there, The Bandit. I've done a lot of political work, which has involved writing for newspapers. My first political project was the skate park project in Seaside, and that was one of the last time I was on KMUN. I was here talking about the skate park project and our kids and the efforts that we were doing to get raise funds and get community support to build a skate park, and that was quite successful. As you know, there's a 10,500 square foot skate park in our town, and a lot of those young people, I keep calling them skate kids, but they're no longer kids. They're about 18 to 25, and they'll be voting for me, which is really exciting. And I'm really hoping to positively affect the voter turnout, especially between that in that young demographic. You know, there's a lot of apathy, but I hope to help cure that.
Well, that kind of seeks into my next question that actually Terry asked before we went on the air. But what caused a intelligent, educated woman like yourself to get into politics and run for mayor? How did that come about?
Okay, sure. Well, when I was 17 years old, I was the victim of sexual abuse. And I sat down with a police officer, and he showed me a book of Oregon revised statutes. And that was my first time reading law. And I remember very vividly reading the law, and he pointed out a few things to me. And I realized at that time that there are a lot of really bad laws. And when bad laws are passed and stay in place, they hurt people. And so it only took another couple of years before I realized, or I came to the firm belief, that it is my purpose in life to help people. And I've always been a helper, servant type of a person that really likes to help people feel better and improve their lives in whatever way possible. And and I think that happiness and health is important. And so at 19, though, I really came, like I said, to the conclusion that it's my purpose to help people, but more specifically to help people by changing law, by utilizing the public process, and by getting politically active. And that was at age 19. And then when I was 21, I started attending local government meetings, like the Seaside City Council, the Park and Rec Board, the County Commission Board. And then at age 22, I settled on my very first, what would be my first political project, and started my first political action committee with a bunch of 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and 15-year-olds.
Yeah, that was the skate park thing?
And that was the skate park thing, yeah. And going back to age 17, you know, it stems from, you know, like I said, sexual abuse. So at some point in my life, in my future, I will attempt to, or excuse me, I should rephrase that. I will not attempt to. I will change law. Oregon revised statutes will be changed in regard to a few specific things in regard to sexual abuse. So, but for now, I'm working on more local things.
Well, those changes have to happen on a state level.
Yeah. Well, I'm working my way up.
I see.
So, you know, and I really think also that at a local level, we still have a lot more power there. You know, obviously we have very little power in the federal government and internationally, but I think at a state and local, especially at a local level, we still have a lot of power. You know, I like to believe that the world is what we make it. And so I work hard to make our world a better place and fill it with lots of love and that health and the quest for health and happiness. And I think that we have more power to do so at a local level.
You know, in the stuff that you sent me, the written material, you comment that the city council made one foul vote that made you realize that your town leadership needs someone like me. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned that there's one issue that you haven't talked about, but you'd like to talk about it on the radio.
No. Right. That vote in particular, much like reading the law at age 17 for the first time, that vote was a real turning point for me. So that vote was in, it was back in 2006, and it was an issue that spanned between 2006 and 2007. And what happened there was a developer named Brian Jeremiah from Portland came to town, and he wanted to clean things up and fix things up and make things prettier. And that might sound all well and nice. Who doesn't like things to be prettier? Sure. However, we need certain things in our life, and affordable housing is one of them. And so what it was is that there was three different apartment complexes in Seaside, and those three apartment complexes were the only three apartment complexes in our entire town that accepted, government, like NOAA and Section 8, any of the government assistance for to help people pay their rent. So it's mainly filled with low-income families, people on fixed income, Social Security, a lot of disabled people. And so those three apartment complexes were very important. They served a purpose in our community. Sure, they might not have been the prettiest, but they were important because they were homes for 103 families or individuals. And with one foul vote, like I said, the city council granted a conditional use permit. And a conditional use permit means they had every legal right to say no to this man. They could have told him, no, we don't want to turn those into condos and try to sell them. But they did not understand the importance of low-income housing, and they didn't understand that most people do not have a savings anymore. You know, the American dream is quite exactly that, a dream. And I think a lot of us are starting to understand that reality is a little different from that. And so they made that vote. And then they were so blown away and so shocked and surprised when 103 individuals and families came to their city council meetings angry and upset and really, really distraught because they had 30 days to get out and there was nowhere else for them to go in their town. So a lot of them were displaced. Now, even previous to that, we already have the highest rate of transient students in our school district. We have a real problem with not serving the people who need our help the most in our community. So that's why I say there was that one foul vote that really negatively affected. Now, if you go and you see those apartment complexes that were turned into condos, they didn't sell. They didn't sell at all. And it was, shortly after that that we had the housing bubble burst and the housing crisis. And even when the city tried to respond in a helpful fashion and hosted a housing summit, they still were so detached from the public and the people in need that their housing summit didn't help at all because they were focusing on people owning homes. People need affordable apartments to live in, affordable houses to rent, not homes that they can buy with a picket fence and 2.5 children. That is not a realistic dream anymore. And what we need is just something tangible and feasible and real possible. And so, so for me, that was a real big turning point. I was a columnist in the Seaside Signal at the time, and I wrote a column in response to that vote and in response to that travesty to all those people and those families. And I began the column with the mission of Seaside, and I ended it with a Nelson Mandela quote about how a nation, and then I added in parentheses, or a small town, ought only be judged by the way, not that it treats its highest citizens, but its lowest ones. And at that point, Seaside was judged very poorly by myself in that regard. And there was a couple city councilors at the time who were very upset at me for being so harsh in my dissent against that vote. And one in particular called me at home to, express their displeasure. And I was a little emotional at the time. And I said, really, where are you right now? And he says, I'm at home. And I said, really, up on the hill, right? He said, yeah. And I said, all right, bye, click, and just hung up because I was so upset. And I was 24, 25 at the time. So I'm quite a passionate person, and sometimes it's hard to tame. But that's one thing that I really worked hard on learning, to tame my passions and learn how to utilize the public process with my passion tamed in order to positively affect change. And I worked on that before deciding to run for mayor.
You mentioned this developer that came in 10 years ago or so, Mr. Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. What's the status of those three buildings today?
Mostly empty and for rent. I believe it's possible that one of them was turned back into a low income housing apartment. In fact, two might have been. It took quite a few years, and it ruined the lives of, temporarily ruined. It really, uprooted the lives of a lot of people. And I'll tell you one crazy story. There was one man who was bedridden and had all kinds of medical technology, and he had a hospital bed in his apartment, and it was the one that was on Nakanakum there. And like I said, I was writing for the Seaside Signal at the time. And ironically enough, the publisher and the editor and the manager of the Seaside Signal at the time all lived in one of those apartment complexes, and so they had to find a place. So the editor at the time was Catherine Head, and so she was one of the keynote speakers at that housing summit, and she was awesome. She also went to the state senate with Betsy Johnson, and two really awesome, powerful women right there that were really speaking the truth at a time when people didn't want to hear it. But that's the thing, is it needs to be spoken. And so anyhow, so there was a man that had that, I think he had MS, and he was bedridden, and the developers were coming and they were trying to knock out windows, but some people weren't able to find a place to go yet, and so they weren't able to make it out within the 30 days. And the Seaside Signal took pictures of this man's hospital bed in his apartment complex with the developers using, I think, a sledgehammer and some other things to knock out a window just a couple feet from his bed. And they just went ahead and started, in spite of the fact that there were ill people living in there, and just started to demolish their home in spite of them still living there.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was really epic in terms of what I see as serious social injustice, and so my response was to do what I could to help at the time, and then resolve to do more in the future, and that's where I'm at now.
And I noticed in some of your literature here, you talk about being activist involving cannabis.
I've done some of that. I have. So I'll start with when I was 10 years old, I was taken to the hospital for the first time with a migraine. And at that time, we only had an emergency room. We didn't have urgent care yet. And migraines were newly being acknowledged as something other than like a psychological thing. And so they gave me a lot of, they did a lot of tests. I saw all the specialists and things like that. And so from age 10 to age 23, I was in the emergency room probably 3 to 12 times per year with these migraines, and they would take about 24 hours of my life away, and I would just puke myself into dehydration, and then they'd have to give me an IV and a Demerol, and then they finally settled on a drug called Imitrex. And so then at about age 23, I just leaned more towards alternative health. I kind of felt like, they didn't know at all they don't know the cause of migraines, and they don't treat the cause of things anyways. They treat symptoms, and in so doing often create new issues and new causes of new things as well as new symptoms. And so I looked into alternative health. I started seeing a naturopath and a chiropractor and doing craniosacral therapy, and I dramatically changed my diet, and I learned at one point how to use cannabis as medicine. Not to say that you can't smoke it and have it be beneficial, because I know especially with cancer patients it can be very beneficial with that instant relief. But for me specifically, learning to use an extract and eat it and even rub it on certain parts of my body, like when I have a migraine, this part of my head back here swells up quite a bit. And so I was actually at Hempfest in Seattle, and a man said, "What's wrong with your wife, bro?" to my husband, because I was like laying over in the shade behind a tree looking like I was about to puke probably. And he said, "Oh, she has migraines." He said, "Well, we'll give her this and tell her to rub some on her temples and put it on her tongue and drink this water." And I had been having, like I said, those migraines for so long, I pretty much knew what the routine was, and I knew that I was going to be puking on the way home, and it was going to be a rough ride home from Seattle. And but he gave me that tincture, and I took it, and I fell asleep in the car, and I woke up hungry, and I was so blown away that marijuana could do that. I mean, I smoked marijuana as a youth, and I actually realized even when I was young that I should not smoke marijuana while I had a headache or if I was thinking a migraine would come, because it made it worse. And that's because the inhalation of any smoke restricts oxygen to the brain, and that can increase swelling. And so smoking marijuana for me is not helpful with migraines. And so it just blew my mind that marijuana could do that for me. I mean, I didn't have to go to ER. I didn't have to get an IV. I didn't puke at all. I didn't get dehydrated. And so it was, I then started calling it my magic migraine potion medicine. And I learned how then to use it as medicine. And you can use coconut. You can use any, it's an alkaloid and it's fat soluble. So you can use any alcohol or any kind of fat. And so I prefer to stick with the healthy ones like olive oil and coconut oil. But you can also use glycerin, which is comes from the coconut plant. And all those things can be found at your local health food store. I suggest the co-op. And so I did at some point then start getting involved because I was politically active. And that was, like I said, is my passion to help people. And I know that this can be very beneficial for people. And especially in our small community where it's still very stigmatized and people are very afraid to be out about their use. I'm pretty sure I was the first person in our county to be really public about our use. And I was featured in a HipFish article about... And that was more about some of the art that I do, which is actually this coming weekend, my sixth annual show at the Hemp Stock Festival in Portland on Waterfront, where I do a hemp fashion and live art show. Because the thing is, with the cannabis plant, not only does, when we grow cannabis to produce marijuana, it makes a medicine that is, it kills cancer cells, and it helps with a long list of ailments for other diseases and sicknesses. But on the other side, when we grow it to make hemp, it could improve and really turn around our environment and our economy. And so there's so many angles to why cannabis is an important plant that we should stop stigmatizing and start paying attention to and maybe start planting. And so... So I have done quite a bit of cannabis activism in that regard. I've worked especially with Oregon Green Free, which is not very active any longer now that we have these dispensaries going on. But before we had those, there was a couple of nonprofits where the main goal was that the majority of medical marijuana patients are low income, fixed income, and or they're strapped for cash because medical bills are insane. Chemotherapy is not cheap. And so you have a lot of growers that are able to grow pounds and pounds and pounds and pounds. And so then they have what they need and then they have extra and they donate that. And so there's all these different chapters throughout the state. And what we did was work on finding patients that needed it but weren't able to get it. And then we'd find the growers that have it and had an abundance and we would transfer that for free. And so for the first 2 years of my activism in regard to cannabis, the majority of it was teaching people how to use it in a healthy fashion, teaching people the law so that they know their rights and their responsibilities as a medical marijuana patient, and then getting them free medicine.
Hmm. Well, I need to remind our listeners that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and we're visiting with Angela Fairless from Seaside, who has decided that she's going to run for mayor.
Crazy.
Right on, sister.
Thank you.
What's your take on the really intractable traffic problems that happen in Seaside? I mean, there's got to be a solution because the traffic backs up all the way to the junction and it gets just kind of crazy.
Mm. Yeah, crazy is the word for it. And so, okay, so now if we say the phrase the highway project, ripples go through the town and people are like, oh no, because that was probably the most divisive political issue of our town. And talk about killing apathy. People came out of the woodworks to talk about. We had to have our town hall meetings on that issue at the convention center because so many people came, we couldn't fit them at the city hall or the community center. One of those town hall meetings went until midnight. Hmm. People were riled up about this. And so I have to also add that this was about 11 or 12 years ago, and I got really politically active at about 10. So I got the tail end of that. And when I started entering politics, people were still so up in arms about that. And I don't know if the mayor will talk about it at all, but boy, oh boy, that was one heck of an issue. And I think you're right to say that there is a solution out there. And so, you know, when we talk about democracy and our way of voting, you know, there was one of the, and I'm sorry, I don't recall which one of the founding fathers said that democracy is like organized mob rule. And to some degree, I think that
might have been James Madison.
Okay. Thank you. See, you're good. So, So I can kind of understand that to some degree, because what you have is often 55 to 45%. So 45% are just being forced to live with something they didn't appreciate, and 55% are that's the mob, I guess. So what I would like to see is more communication and cooperation and compromise. And I really do have faith that we as people can come together and find solutions that work for more people and hurt none. And so, you know, I can't say that I have an opinion on whether we should have gone with the 3-lane plan or ODOT's plan, you know, or come up with something different. But I think that the issue definitely needs to be revisited. It's a big issue, especially during those couple weekends like the volleyball and the Hood to Coast weekend. It's just insane. And most locals don't leave their house unless it's on foot during those weekends. And so it's an issue that definitely does need to be revisited. And I really do believe that all people have good intentions and they mean well. And all we need is good quality communication and coming together in order to find the solution that works for all of us without hurting any on each and every issue. And it's facilitating and leading that kind of communication that I feel confident I'm capable of.
The real issue to me with the traffic problem is one of money, mm-hmm. is that any kind of long-term solution is going to be incredibly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the federal dollars drop off. We used to get a lot of federal money for transportation. We don't get that much anymore. Mm-hmm. So how would you envision a small town like Seaside being able to fund something like that?
Okay. I know that there was a lot of funding involved in that last one, and that was one of the big issues, is they didn't want to lose the possibility of having that funding, but it was voted down anyhow. So what I will say is this, you know, when I first started the skate park project, people were like, oh, you're crazy, you're stupid, you're wasting your time, it's going to cost too much money, and people don't want it and all that. Well, my thing is, well, we can talk about the difficulties or we can talk about solutions. And I know that raising funds, especially when we're talking millions and millions of dollars, which a project like that would probably cost, it seems like a huge, huge mountain. But I believe that anything is possible, and money's out there and it will be found. And when we all come together and we finally agree on something we want and we all focus on what we are after, we'll get it.
You know, another solution to that problem, Terry just handed me a note. The problems increase with the different functions during the summer in Seaside, mm-hmm. the Hood to Coast, for example. What about just not doing the Hood to Coast? What about just not doing the volleyball thing?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting suggestion, and I have a feeling that there's probably a pretty large pocket of locals of Seaside that would be like, yes, get rid of them, you know, and the famous bumper sticker, if it's not tourist season, why can't we shoot them? And I certainly do not condone shooting anybody, but I understand the sentiment of how frustrated you can be during those weekends, and I think that it's possibility that there's a large amount of people that would like that, but probably the business owners wouldn't. But then there's also the theory. A lot of people say that it doesn't actually bring that much more business, because people, like, the three main ones are 4th of July, Hood to Coast, and then volleyball weekend. Now, 4th of July, it definitely brings in economic boost. It really does. And it's not as chaotic as Hood to Coast, in terms of the traffic lineup, maybe, as Hood to Coast, especially because of the runners on the road and the relay and all of that. But I've also heard that a lot of times with the Hood to Coast and volleyball, that they that doesn't really economically improve a whole lot, because these people come here and then they leave as quick as they can. They try and bring their own food, or there's other vendors from out of town selling food on the beach. So I think that that's at least an option that we ought to look at. But I think, and maybe this sounds horrible, but I think that the Hood to Coast and the volleyball ones, I would like to see the organizations that make money off of those give our town more money. The Hood to Coast finally did start giving, I think, like just recently, they gave $18,000 to the city of Seaside. And a couple of years ago, you know, a park that I take my son to often, 12th Avenue Park, you know, they donated money and it was used to improve that park a lot. And I feel like... if we're going to continue having these huge events, then we need to find a way, and that's something I wrote on my website, we need to find a way to minimize the difficulty and negative strain on locals and maximize the positive effects, especially economically. And I think that we could start by having the organizations that make money on those, most of which are Portland-based, give back more to our community.
You know, one of the things I'm curious about, Angela, is your take. Let me back up a minute. We know that we're going to have a subduction zone earthquake here within the next 30 to 50 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Seaside is going to be heavily impacted. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could share your thoughts about that event and what you're anticipating.
Sure. Well, I think tsunami preparedness is one of the most important issues in our town.
But the tsunami would be the second thing. The first thing is a violent earthquake.
Right, right. I think that there's been a lot of disagreement about whether or not that should be a priority. A lot like climate change, there's a lot of people who just don't even believe. Oh, those quack scientists don't know what they're talking about. They're just trying to drum up fear, and it's just propaganda, and they want to, well, there might be some sliver of truth to that, but overall, would we rather be safe or sorry? I'm the type that would rather be safe. And so, you know, like one of the issues that really affects this is the school bond. You know, we thought that we could build a school up high above the inundation zone and that would really help. And that failed miserably in the polls. And I have my opinions on why that was.
Why was it?
Well, again, I think it's because our leaders are out of touch with the majority of the public, and they think, and in regard to the economy and what people can actually afford, just like that housing issue. And so people saw the price tag on that and just flipped their lid. Whoa, that's huge. No, we're a fairly poor community. We should not be trying to have the best school in the whole world. And so, I mean, even if they had that same plan, but they presented it differently, I think that they maybe could have had it pass, but they used, I think, fear and really, and a lot of, and this is what I think a lot of politics is just fear and ego. So they used fear as a motivating factor, and then they had a really huge price tag, which wouldn't have been so bad if they had had, if they were able to explain where the money was coming from, and especially just maybe downplay there, we're going to have the best in the world, world class, top of the notch kind of a thing. Let's have it be more reasonable. And so I think that it had largely to do with the economy and money, and that's why it didn't pass. And our leaders are just out of touch with understanding what people think they can afford. But actually our other, you know, John Dunzer, who is, a self-proclaimed curmudgeon candidate for the mayor, he actually had a pretty good plan. You know, now he might be hard to listen to because his presentation isn't very polite or maybe politically correct or whatever you want to call it, but he means well. Like I said, I believe most people mean well. And he actually has a really good plan in regard to the school. And that's something that I would, if elected mayor, I would look into his plan actually and see if we can find a compromise between that, you know, huge campus on the hill that costs a lot of money and just adding on to what we have, because the elementary school is already fairly close to that inundation level. And if we just added the schools, the middle and the high schools to that, but higher up, then I think that it would be more reasonable and more doable.
Yeah, the main thing there, of course, would be to repair the bridges, because when the earthquake happens, the bridges are going to fail.
And that's another thing that John Dunzer has in his plan. He actually, he handed out at the chamber breakfast his kind of like his vision for Seaside, and it is epic. But he does go, some of the things are just absolutely so over the top, where I think that a lot of locals would be like, no, you're trying to change us too much, or that's too much money. But some of them, like his school plan and the obvious need to readdress the bridges, are really important.
Well, I'm unhappy to announce, Angela, that we are out of time. Next week we'll be talking with Don Larson, who is the mayor in Seaside and against whom Angela Fairless is running, and we'll get his take on the things. And I'd like to thank Terry Wilson,
thank you,
our engineer, and Kathleen Morgane, our producer. And I'd urge folks to stick around and listen to Albert Smith and his always wonderful Friday Folk Show. I'll talk to you next week.